previously on the Adventure Zone, that it seems like the undead, or I should say the living dead, are immune to the Voidfish's powers. This apparition, this red-robed lich, it starts to lose its composure. It starts to lose, and I mean that literally, like the spectral form starts to jerk violently, and a bolt of energy kind of like whips off of it. Taco, your umber staff turns inside out and sucks that wand in and devours it. Mm-hmm. You remember the umber staff is capable of consuming the magic essence of your defeated foes. Listen, I'm pretty sure you guys are going to get out of here, so I'm going to part ways with you now.
What?
When you see Lucretia again, tell her, I don't know, make up something heroic for me, I guess.
Nope.
You jump back up onto the catwalk, and as you do, you hear fake Magnus go, what? Wearing a plate of very, very, very fashionable elven scale mail, you see one of the mannequins standing right next to you.
I'll be having my body back, you undead fuck.
Aw, dead. What a cool cuss. I think you might be doing some cussing of your own by this episode's end. It's the Adventure Zone!
Let's roll initiative. That's always a really exciting way to start a podcast, is the sound of dice hitting some table.
I wish
and then
I
also
had
the, and also the math. Like, people love it when it's just like, welcome to the story. Now it's just math time.
I wish I had wooden dice. That'd be very fitting.
9.
Oh, my God. Oh, I have advantage, don't I, on initiative?
I have, yes,
that was
13.
1. That was my 5th one. And a 2.
Hey,
awesome.
Nice. Much better.
What'd you get, Taco?
9.
Okay. So before we get into the fight, something happens. That black smog that's all surrounding the ceiling of this gigantic cavernous room that you are all in, standing on this catwalk in the middle of it. It starts to take shape immediately above the three of you, and it forms into a massive steel beam. That just after it takes shape, it becomes sort of affected by gravity, and it starts to fall towards you. And just before you sort of reflexively prepare to leap out of the way with varying levels of success, I'm sure, you hear a crash. And you look up, and you see two human-shaped statues have also formed out of the smog, and their arms are held up over their heads. And they've caught this big, heavy beam that was about to fall on you. And all of you can see the red robe now, not just Magnus, because Magnus, you don't have true sight anymore because you don't have your body anymore. But all of you can see now, plain as day, the red robe. And its hand is outstretched in the direction of these statues. And all of it, the statues and the beam, revert back into black smog that lifts up into the ceiling.
Listen, Taco, Merle, I know that's a little weird, and you're just going to have to trust me on this one. He's with us, I think, more or less.
He gives you a big thumbs up.
I give him a wooden, salute.
Taco and Merle, are you guys cool with that?
Yeah, I've watched TV before. I know how these things go.
All right. Seeing this new entrant into the fight and seeing that this trap made out of smog didn't land, Magnus, or fake Magnus, and Edward inside of Magnus laughs, and he says, well, this fight just got a lot more interesting. And then he reaches a burly arm up into the air and snaps. And suddenly the cylindrical chambers that are surrounding this central platform, they all start emitting these different colored beams of neon light that shoot up and onto the ceiling of this massive chamber. And that outer ring of cylinders begins to rotate around the central platform, the floor of which has also turned into a checkered neon light. First in the order is Lydia, who is she is floating up into the air. And I think on her first turn, she casts a spell, and she heals Magnus.
Oh, that's... Oh.
She heals Magnus for 38 points of damage.
Super cool.
Wait a minute. I thought healing didn't work in here.
She says, that's only a one-way street, dear. Next in the order is real Magnus, Mannequin Magnus. Now, Travis, do you want to tell everybody what I made for you? I made you a little present.
Griffin made me a mannequin sheath. I would like to read a little bit of it, just the right side column. Personality traits is a mannequin. Ideals, to be a mannequin. Bonds, very few, because is mannequin. Flaws, splinters. And then under features and traits, is a literal mannequin. Super great.
Fears, termites.
You'll notice under languages, you can speak common and mannequin. So we'll see.
Then I turn to all the mannequins around the table, and I say, hello.
I guess there's a bunch of mannequins in the audience, and when you talk to them, they all start clapping and applauding and cheering for you.
Any help?
They should all shake their heads no and shrug.
Super cool. Got it. You know what? I'm gonna jump onto Magnus.
Okay. What are you trying to do? What's your goal here?
I'm trying to get the Chance Lance away.
Okay, so I think you're going to have to overpower him. I think it's going to take two checks. I think you're going to have to overpower him first.
It's going to be hard. I'm very strong.
Yes, you are. You're going to have to overpower him first, and then I think maybe sleight of hand to try to like get the thing out of his hand. Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any chance that Magnus's body is having any sort of allergic reaction to healing magic? We wouldn't know before this point. So
what did you get on your strength check?
I'm trying to think if there's anything I know about my own body that would help me here.
Do you have a fucking weak point?
Yeah, like I've never said it before, but like I have a blind spot.
One thing about me is my soft spot never closed over. I hope no one ever finds out.
I've got that trick knee.
My adult fontanelle.
I rolled a 15 plus 3, 18.
Okay, well, I rolled a 14,
yeah.
But it's going to be higher because...
It's like plus 9 or some shit.
Yeah, he's a strong boy. So you jump onto real Magnus. You jump onto... I'm just going to use names and not like refer to body, or else this fight's going to be garbage. But you try to jump onto Edward inside of your body, but he very easily shrugs you off. And I think you kind of make a dex save for me.
9 plus.
Okay, you keep your footing. As he brushes you off, you aren't like thrown to the ground. Next in the order is Edward, and he draws Rail Splitter, and he says, "Let's see what this baby can do." And he does a goading attack to you, Magnus. That is a 21 versus AC.
I know that hits.
Yeah.
I will say, Griffin, I'm confused here because I don't see him as the mannequin to have any advantages whatsoever.
No, it's almost like you're a mannequin.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this body to make this fight not one-sided.
Work with your friends. So I add a superiority die to the damage roll. So that's 16 damage, and you have to make a wisdom saving throw.
Oh, that's got to be good, right? 17 plus.
Yeah, that does it. Okay, you are not goaded. For my second attack,
there should be. I'm going to make just an argument here, Griffin, that because my body is made of wood, I should take decreased damage.
No, I don't think so.
You would think that being wood, I would take less damage than a flesh body hit by an axe.
Yeah, Merle, he's going to come after you with Rail Splitter.
This is bullshit.
And he got a 18 versus AC?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just want to remind all of our listeners, if you're sitting there going, but Rail Splitter against wood, that's only against trees. It has very specific magic.
Yes, yes. That's only 9 damage.
I'm dead.
Whoa, really?
Yep.
Well, we've had a lot of fun here with... No, that's not how death works, but you are unconscious.
Okay.
Merle drops to the ground as Itaka, this is probably pretty upsetting for you and you, Magnus.
I've just been killed. Is nobody going to be upset?
You're not killed. You're unconscious, you baby.
You just saw Magnus, and it's not really Magnus, but like you saw your friend who you've been traveling with for a year just cut down your other friend. I imagine it's pretty brutal, but yeah, Merle, you are down on the ground. Next in the order is Taco.
I am going to cast.
Now I've reached a point where when I hear Justin say I'm going to cast, I assume the next words are like a thing that's going to break the sequence of the shit that you've written down.
No, that's not going to happen. I'm going to cast animate objects on the. I'm going to cast animate objects on the mannequins, and I can animate up to 10 of them.
Holy fucking shit! What? Jesus, yeah, Fantasia. Jesus, yeah, Fantasia Barino.
Yeah. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun,
I'm going to animate all of them and command them to just like tackle Magnus.
Okay. Flesh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. So
they have, let me tell you.
Let me do this first. Let me do this first because fair play. They are also right now under the control of probably Lydia, since she's like in lich form still. I will let you attempt this, but I think this is a fucking like contest of wills, right?
So I think can I give Taco advantage by speaking to my wooden brethren?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What do you say?
Friends, mannequins,
lend me your ears.
Help us, my wooden brothers. Join me in this fight against your captors, your controllers. They have used you for evil, and we shall use you. We shall free you from their bonds, and after this, we'll totally take you with us, 100% guaranteed.
Okay, they're into it. Let's do a straight up and down int contest.
Okay, cool.
I got a 5.
I got an 18. Suck it.
10 of these mannequins are now under your control, and they kind of like shake their heads and they climb up onto the stage, and you're just having them just tackle Magnus, yeah, outright.
They have
Edward outright.
They have 40 hit points, wow. 13 AC, plus 5 to hit, 2d6 plus 1 damage. Strength is 10, dex is 12.
So wait, you can actually, they're all attacking?
What's up?
So this horde of, okay.
Go, my beautiful army. I should clarify, actually, upon further reading of the spell, if they're medium, I can only do 5. So there's 5.
Okay. Okay. So they five. I'm going to do 5 attacks then?
5 attacks against Edward. That's right.
Why don't you roll them? Just roll 5d20, and we'll do an average for damage and add it up like that so we get through it fast. Fucking 18, shit.
18, 11, 15... 5, 11, plus 5 to hit.
Oh, well then, I think 3 of those hit. Okay. So, yeah. And what's the damage?
2d6 plus 1.
I just roll 2d6 and we'll...
5, 4.
Okay, so 10, so fucking 30 points of damage.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Okay, so 5 of these mannequins climb up out of the audience and just start bludgeoning Magnus, and he uses Rail Splitter to fight off 2 of them, but 3 of them get the better of him. And that was a pretty good, fucking good turn of events that just happened. Merle, you're up next. Roll a d20 for me, because it's time for a death save. Have we ever done a death save in the 2.5 years we've been making this show?
I don't think we have.
Okay, you
we
just
got
rolled,
knocked in pedals to the metal.
Taco got
we
knocked,
got
out,
knocked out.
Yeah.
I got knocked out, but I think... We got rescued, right?
I think so, before this had to happen. So roll a d20.
Please, what we need, there has to be a competent woman somewhere. That's what we always lean on. We're in dire straits as a competent woman.
Where's an adult?
Roll a d20, Merle, and you don't add anything to it. You want to roll good.
15.
All right, that's 1 success. If you get to 3 successes, you're stable at 0 hit points. If you reach 3 failures, you are dead forever. Merle's gone.
Now, what can we do to impact that scenario?
You can heal him, but uh-oh. The other thing you can do is make a medicine check, and with a roll of 10 in medicine, you stabilize him like he has had 3 successes, but it takes your action up.
Okay. Am I allowed to know what the number is I got to beat?
10.
It's 10. Straight up and down 10. If you roll a 20, it counts. If you roll a crit 20, you pop back up to 1 HP.
I am as dead can be.
On her next turn, it's Lydia's turn. Actually, something happens before her turn. A big iron wrecking ball swings out of the black smog, manifesting from the smog, and it starts to swing in your direction, Taco. And at the last second, another wrecking ball forms out of the smog, swinging in at a perpendicular angle, and it smashes into the other one, and it sort of sends them both sailing off course, like splitting the uprights around you. And as they both sort of pass you, missing by a few inches, they turn back into smog.
Cool, 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 cool.
So Lydia's up next. She is going to cast on Mannequin Magnus Ray of Enfeeblement.
Uh-huh. And then?
Black Beam of Innervating Energy extends from your finger. Make a spell ranged attack roll against a target. On hit, the target only deals half damage with weapon attacks that use strength until the spell ends.
When the spell ends?
You make a constitution save. That's an 18 versus AC.
Yeah, that hits.
All right, so you do
half damage on an attack.
A half damage save ends.
Got it.
You are up, Magnus.
Okay. I've never thought about this before. Where does my body keep its items?
All over, but as you just saw, it's going to be tough for you to get a weapon from your body.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. I want to run up and kind of like throw my arms around myself.
Okay.
And in doing so, I want to attempt to activate my magnetic charge.
What does that do?
Magnetic charge, I've never used it before.
Okay.
For a very specific reason that I will describe now. It flings away mental objects from the owner of magnetic charge up to 10 feet. Metal objects like rail splitter or the chance lanch or the shield. A fist-sized glass ball with a blue button on top. Once the button is pressed, the ball will begin to glow and produce a magnetic field. The field repels any metal object within 10 feet from the ball. Take okay, one day cool. for enough charge to build up to use again.
All right, cool. So I think here's what I'll do for this, because I like it a lot. Instead of making you overpower him first, I think this is just a sleight of hand, like almost like you're pickpocketing him. And
that's an 18, motherfucker.
Yeah, do you have any bonuses?
Plus dex, that's 3, that's 21.
Yeah, that's definitely a success. Okay, this is fucking cool. This is only a one-time use dealy, though, right? So
correct.
I guess it's all been, this is, I can't not let this happen.
It's once per day, but yeah.
Managed to sort of get within range and dodge. I think he's at this point fighting off the other mannequins that Taco has sicked on him. And you sort of get around behind your body and see this clipped into your belt. And you manage to get your mannequin hand on the object and click down on that blue button. And sure enough, I think his armor wouldn't go flying off. It's probably tied and secured onto him. Also, if memory serves, it's that cool raven armor.
Yeah, it's that feather leather. Yeah.
But the shield of heroic memories goes flying off the catwalk. And I think all this stuff goes flying off the catwalk and into the crowd. So the shield goes flying off, rail splitter goes flying off, the chance lance goes flying off and actually hits one of the mannequins in the crowd, which collapses. Merle, your eyeglasses go flying off.
Woo! It's only a sphere of 10 feet. So
yeah, they're on the cusp of it, so it's not as dramatic an effect. It kind of, you can see where they landed because they're not corrective lenses. You can see they're pretty close to you. And
I can't see anything. I'm dead. Remember?
Oh, that's right. And Taco, the flaming, raging, poisoning sword of doom falls off your back and skitters a few feet. There's probably some other metallic stuff that
that's heartbreaking, by the way, because it's of no use to me if it's not looking cool on my back.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. It's
next in the order.
And then using my real ass voice, okay. I call Chance Lance to myself.
Oh my god. Ooh, are we gonna do a fucking Star Wars Episode 7, like...
Fuck yeah.
All right, so I think you're both going to do it. I think he's... here's the thing. He's also going to try to call back the Chance Lance. Because he kind of has your voice also. Like, we've had that in the fiction, so it's going to be fucking both...
How does
both
he know that? There is no fucking way.
It's too good to not do it, though, guys.
Fucking count
Make a charisma... I think that's what it is.
I feel like charisma would remain the same no matter what body I'm in, but sure. That's a 16 plus 1, 17.
That's an 11 minus garbage, because I don't think Magnus's body is very charismatic. All right. You both reach your hands out, and yours is the one that the Chance Lance flies into, and he looks over and actually smirks when he sees how things have gone. And it's his
turn. Who does? Who does?
Edward does.
Oh.
It's his turn. What does he do?
Oh my god, I know what he does.
This is so... I'm so delighted by all of these things I didn't even think about. For instance, Magnus, Edward, is going to make a strength check to try to rip off one of your fucking arms.
Oh no.
Oh, that's so poetic.
Do you think that, I'll ask you, just to fair is fair, do you think this would be a contest, or do you think this would be just he checks to see if he can do it? Like, would you use your own strength to, like, I think you would, to fight him off from, well, I know this fight has been all contests, but, like, I kind of like the way it's going so far. I feel good about my role, though.
Oh, no. Okay. Whoa, off the table? Yeah, I rolled a 3.
Okay, yeah, he rips off your right arm, and he says...
Not his flesh bod, right? His wood bod.
His wood bod, yeah, he rips off your mannequin arm.
I had an image of him, like, ripping off his
arm. Ha! There! Take
now,
that!
Now, Griffin, how does that... If I don't have blood and veins and stuff, how does that affect damage to me?
Well, I'm going to just roll some dice, and I'm going to tell you the number.
Okay. I would say it wouldn't.
That you get when you animate an object, it gets the stats.
Yeah. That's 21 points of damage.
For unarmed?
Yeah. Well, it's a special unarmed because he ripped it. He didn't punch you. He tore your arm off.
I'll keep that in mind every other time I've ever done it, Griffin.
Magnus.
Uh-huh.
Got something for you.
Yes.
You just got your ass kicked. Mm-hmm. And... when that happens, you feel a vision sort of wash over you, and suddenly you are miles away from this fight.
Meditating.
Well, no, you're remembering, but this act of remembering is so, like, powerful that you are just, like, in another state. And so you just got your ass kicked, and you remember another time where you got your ass kicked. And it was a time where you saved a dog from some bullies that were kicking it around. And you remember this memory really well. It was one of the things that you saw when you spoke to the Chalice in the last arc. But there were parts of it then that you remember were kind of foggy, parts of this memory that just seemed a little off, and you didn't realize it. What was off until this moment, and in this particular vision, one thing that was kind of foggy was a big one. It was the sky. And as you look up in this memory, you're like lying on the ground, and I think you've just like gotten beaten up by these kids, but you scared them off, and I think the dog comes and licks your face before it also kind of ungratefully takes off. So you're laying on your back and you're looking up at the sky, and the sky is this unnatural light purple color. And as you stop to think, like, wow, that's weird, you realize that there are two suns in the sky, and they're nearly overlapping each other right on the horizon. And you think, oh, that's weird. But then you remember, oh, well, no, it's not weird at all, because that's how it is here in your home. This world in this, that this memory is taking place in, this is your home. This world that you're on now, this place you're at and have been for a while, it is not where you're from.
It's Dagobah.
It's kind of... well, it would be Tatooine, but it's not any of those wonderful licensed properties.
Shit!
And just like that, you're back in the fight, just having had your arm ripped off. Next up is Taco.
So that was just like a fun memory. It didn't help me in this fight or nothing. Just a fun little, huh, that's weird. Anyways, back to where I'm getting my ass handed to me.
Can you, Griffin, just so because I feel like a lot has been going on, can you re-describe the scene?
There you have a fleet of mannequins, and are the mannequins still going? Are the mannequins still attacking?
Yeah, I got them for an hour. For a minute.
Okay, yeah, you still got him then. So three mannequins are fighting Magnus, who's just had his metallic weapons and shield thrown from him. Floating above him in this about 10 or 15 feet up is Lydia, who is casting spells down from the sky. You have a nearly dead Merle lying next to you.
Oh, I'm dead.
And you're not dead. And you have Magnus standing in front of Edward with his arm torn off.
I'm not dead yet.
Oh, that's good.
Now, Griffin, can I assume that he took the arm that didn't have the chain? Like, I was reaching for the chain.
Yeah, you still got the chain.
He pulled the other one? Okay, cool. That's something, I guess.
Yeah. Go ahead and roll your d20s real quick for... actually, I just to streamline this, because I don't know how long this fight's going to go, and I don't have to roll, like, 80 dice every turn. I think just roll a d10, and we'll knock the number in half, and that'll be how many mannequins hit.
You weren't talking to me, the dead guy, right?
You're not dead, Clinton. You are unconscious. You are betwixt the state.
Do you know how when you go to sleep every night and you dream your dreamy dreams? You're not a dead man. You're just sort of...
This is an ex-dwarf.
Okay. You're not.
He has passed beyond.
Dad, hey, Dad, we have a 3 Monty Python joke limit before you're banned from the podcast.
Oh, right. Okay.
I rolled 10 out of 10.
Oh,
so all 5 hit.
Okay. All right. Cool. Go ahead and roll 2d6 then.
3 and 5.
8. So fucking
plus 1. Plus
40, 45 damage.
Yeah.
Okay, Jesus.
And they're loving it.
Yeah, everybody's loving it. That goes without
everybody's
saying.
Everybody's loving it. The other mannequins are like, finally, it's our time to shine.
All right, Edward is not looking so good, by which I mean Magnus is not looking so good, kind of, I guess.
I'm going to cast...
If we kill his body, what happens to Magnus?
Well, he won't die right away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Be fine. Yeah. Man, this is about to become the Taco Show starring Taco Ace. Taco and his wooden buddy, no name.
Pinocchio.
Taco and his friend Pinocchio.
The little wooden boy.
The ghost of their friend Merle. These three jokesters. This isn't that cool, but I want to try to do what I think would be the most practical. And I'm going to cast Protection from Evil and Good on the Mannequin Merle. Or Mannequin Magnus. Magnus.
Okay, what does that do?
One willing creature is protected against certain types of creatures, aberrations, celestial, elementals, fey, fiends, and the undead. It grants several benefits. Creatures of those types have disadvantages on attack rolls against the target.
Okay.
The target can't be charmed, frightened, or possessed by them. If the target is already charmed, frightened, or possessed by such a creature, the target has advantage on any new saving throw against the relevant effect.
Okay, cool.
And just in the interest of me, I didn't roll to see if I broke the enfeeble.
Oh, yeah, go and roll d20. Yeah.
Roll the 15.
Yeah, you're good. Merle, before you do your thing, I heard you just roll. I just heard you roll your fucking.
Did you roll the giantess dice? Yeah. What the fuck was that?
Yeah, that's the massive D20 that they sent us.
Merle, you see a small shape appear above you, or rather, I guess you're just kind of you don't see right. Your eyes are probably closed because you're unconscious, but you you feel a presence, I guess. And Taco and Magnus, you do see what appears right above Merle. And it's Cam's floating head, and he still looks really scared. He doesn't have a wand. He is completely unarmed. But he says, Hey, Crimson Wonder, were you the one that cooked up that door earlier? I got an order for you. Can you make me up a healing game? And the red robe nods, and suddenly Cam's pedestal from the healing game that you all played in the last round emerges from the floor in a column of black smoke. And Cam looks down at Merle, and then he looks up at you, Taco and Magnus, and he says, I thought of something heroic to do. And a mage hand appears in front of Cam and slaps down on the pedestal. And a beam of light shoots up from the ground beneath the pedestal, consuming him and the pedestal, which disappears in a puff of black smoke. And Merle, you are healed for 6 hit points. And you're back awake.
Hey, awesome.
Cam! Cam!
In Merle's defense, he didn't see any of that happen.
Yeah, he doesn't know what happened.
What the hell?
Merle, you are awake and you are prone.
All right. I am... Prone is okay. I am going... Now, go with me on this. For once, let me do something in this game.
You fucking summon Della Reese all the time. What are you talking about? 4-1.
And look, they bumped her off. It's not like it was Roma Downey. Okay. I'm going to use the Ring of the Grammarian.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
To change divine word into divine wood.
And you pop the most righteous boner.
And this imbues Marionette Magnus with divine power and heals him for 20 points.
And heals it for... how about roll a d20, and that's how many you heal, plus wisdom.
Okay.
I'll give you the rest of the shit, and we'll figure out what divine power is in a second.
I rolled an 11 plus 3 wisdom, so that's 14. So
All right.
It gives him 14 points, and he is divine.
All right, and we'll figure that out in a second. We'll get to that real soon, actually. Lydia is up next, and she is going to cast Death Bolt at Taco. And that is a 17 versus AC Taco.
Yup.
It's going to be a bad hit. That is 19 points of damage, Taco.
Been a good run.
Are you at zero?
Taco. I'm at negative 5.
Oh, my God. Okay, Taco goes down.
Adios.
Taco goes down, but this time his soul didn't fire out of his body to go on a rescue mission. It's still in there, and it is asleep. Magnus, you are up.
Okay, so I'm holding Chance Lance.
Mm-hmm.
A weapon given to me by a goddess.
Yes.
And I am imbued with divinity.
Yes.
I'm going to channel that divinity into the Chance Lance and stab Magnus in the back.
Okay. All right, yeah, make an attack roll.
Off the table. It's a 15 plus 9, 24.
It wouldn't be plus 9 because that factors in your human fighter strength, but it's plus your, yeah, I think it's plus 5 because it's plus 3 with your strength and then with
so 20. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, that hits. Roll 3d10 damage.
Okay, 10, 2, 4. So 16 plus 5, I think, for the weapon, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You rear back the Chance Lance and jab it forward, and before it even makes contact, a faint light emits out of the front of it. Like you're shooting a beam of very faint, but it's there, holy light out of the end of the Chance Lance, and that's what hits Edward. And Edward flies forward, and because you're behind him, Magnus, he kind of lands almost perfectly in between all of you. You hear him say, he kind of gets up on all fours, and he says, And then he falls over, and almost like a a cartoon dead person, you see Edward's spectral lich form rise up out of Magnus's body. And he says, "Did you really think?" And before he finishes his thought, Taco, your umbrella has turned inside out, and it's pointing in Edward's direction. Because whenever you defeat a magical enemy, the Umbra Staff consumes the magic essence of that magic user. And unfortunately for Edward, he's all magical energy.
Only Taco could do away with an enemy while he was unconscious.
I just killed somebody while I'm dead. What's
yeah,
up?
So your fucking
Taco rules.
Your fucking Umbra Staff like rears up in your sleepy hand and eats Edward whole. And like full blown fucking Ghostbusters style. Edward is pulled into the mouth of the Umbra Staff and disappears into it. But he doesn't go down quite as smooth as the wands and staves that the umbrella has consumed in the past.
A lot of body to that one, huh? Bitter. Some tannins.
It's very hoppy. It's an IPA.
It feels actually like he's getting tossed around inside of there, like he's banging against the walls of the Umbra Staff. And it actually goes flying out of your unconscious hand, like really, really quickly. And it's just kind of like bouncing around the floor as he is just getting like tossed around inside of it. And after about 10 seconds or so, the Umbra Staff turns inside out again and shoots him out. And he slides about 8 feet down the runway and then disintegrates into ash. And nice. Lydia screams when this mm-hmm. happens, and she drops down beside her fallen brother. And, like, immediately you can tell, like, something is wrong with her because, like, she's losing shape. She's losing, like, the clarity of her lit shape, and these bolts of crackling black electricity are, like, encircling her as she's losing her form. And she's right now she's just back in her basic black robe form, like no fancy garments whatsoever, and she's coming apart kind of like you saw the red robe fall apart once before back in the 11th hour arc, only this time she is not pulling herself back up together, and she picks up some of the ash in her hands and she says, I guess we still needed each other after all. And then she points a finger towards all of you and she says, I don't actually think she says anything. I think she just screams, and there's a flash of darkness, and there's this deafening roar, and you feel this like dark crackling energy blowing around all of you like a sandstorm. And when it passes, she's gone. And sitting in a pile of ashes, another pile of ashes at the end of the runway, you see a small copper bell inlaid with a diamond pattern across its body where she laid. And you hear the red robe say, "Oh my God." And he points down at the ground on the runway. And Magnus, all your belongings, the belongings that you didn't knock away are piled up on the ground where Edward fell. But your body is gone.
My beautiful body.
With her last furious act, Lydia destroyed your body. Hey everybody, welcome to the middle of the episode. I'm Griffin McElroy, your Dungeon Master, your best friend, and your clock. I couldn't think of anything, but on my desk right in front of me, there's a very small clock, and so I just said that. Thanks, though, for listening to episode 57 of The Adventure Zone. It's one of the later episodes in the Suffering Game arc, which is drawing to a close, and boy, things are just about to pop off. I'm very excited for you to hear the rest of the episode, but I'm more excited for you to hear about our great, great sponsors that we have this week.
Hey, a couple of quick announcements, too, before we get back to the episode. We've got a bunch of cool stuff over at macromerch.com. If you haven't checked it out, you need to go do that. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will be donated to Border Angels. Macromerch.com, check that out. Also, Griffin's book, The Stowaway, is out now. To Choose Your Own Adventure. Go to bit.ly/GriffinStowaway and get all the information there or find it at a local bookstore.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome, Griffin. And Justin's great, too. He does cool things.
Whatever.
All right. Back to the show.
Have a personal message here for this Jumbotron, and it's for Angus McDonald, Boy Detective, and it's from our first Jumbotron guest DM, Chris Callison Birch, who says, "You are in the bargain aisle of Fantasy Costco. A sign reads, 'Incomplete set, now only 10,000 gold. You see a familiar glint. You pull a fork from your pocket to compare. This is your grandfather's silverware. Your emotions swirl. Joy, confusion, realization, betrayal. You smell brimstone and turn to see Garfield the Deals Warlock. What do you do?" And I guess, am I supposed to... I think the better thing for me to do, instead of playing this as Angus, is just sort of pitch this to the audience, and then I don't know how you're going to continue this correspondence with the entire listenership of the Adventure Zone, but you'll figure something out. Man, but what would Angus do? Shit, I don't know. You're putting me on the spot here. Thank you for this wonderful conundrum, though. I feel like it's fleshed out Angus as a character. And I have a commercial message here. It's for Necronomicards, which is a horror card game now available at Necronomicards.com. And they say, "Is your idea of a good time matching together arcane magic symbols to summon horrific monsters and ancient Lovecraftian deities? You're in luck. Necronomicards is a fast-paced, cutthroat indie card game of pattern recognition and backstabbing for 2 to 4 players. Beautifully illustrated and extremely fun and easy to learn, it is the perfect game for any fan of horror or mythology. Buy it now at www.necronomicards.com and keep an eye out for Necronomicards Volume 2 coming to Kickstarter in March 2017. That's next month. We got sent this game. Thank you very much, Necronomicards. It is it's really cool and too spooky to be forgotten. I want to thank everybody who's been tweeting about the show using the Zonecast hashtag. If you do that, you might end up as a character on the show. I have ideas for how I can inject a few more characters into the remainder of this campaign. And every time I mention the end of this campaign, I do always have to also mention that the podcast is not coming to an end. No, of course not. We like doing the podcast way too much. We're just going to figure out something different and very, very exciting to do. But we have time to figure that out as we move into sort of the end game here for this campaign. But we really appreciate you spreading the word. We don't pay to advertise the show at all. And so, any growth that we've had can be attributed only and explicitly to you, the listeners, telling your friends, who you think might like it. So, thank you all very, very much for helping to make this show what it is. That is it for this commercial break. Thank you all so much. Oh, I guess I should mention the TV show that also launches today. If you're a fan of this podcast and you've listened to My Brother and Me, we did a TV show for My Brother and Me, for CISO. And all 6 episodes of that TV show are live right now. God, what a bonkers day this is. They're all live right now at CISO.com, or you can grab them on the CISO app, which is on a bunch of different set-top boxes. I've got it on Apple TV. CISO is amazing. They let us do a TV show. They have a bunch of other really great original programming. And again, the Mabim Bam show is up there now. So go check it out. We're really proud of it. And I hope you really enjoy it. That is it. Okay, back to the rest of this episode. It's about to get, y'all, it's about to get wet and wild. I've like, things are about to happen in this episode that I've been like looking forward to for like a year. And so I'm so excited for it to start popping off. And I just hope you, like, this is a weird thing for like somebody who's telling a story to like ask of its audience, but I hope you trust me, because I've got a plan. It might be a bad plan, but anyway, here's the rest of the episode. Next episode is gonna go up on March 2nd. So we'll talk to you then, and until then, Keep stay frosty. Bye. All of you are still on the catwalk. The bell is right in front of you, and you feel it sort of calling all of you. Merle, you're up, but Taco is down, which you may need to rectify.
Do we think our healing powers are back?
You could give it a shot.
I have a spell called Raise Dead.
I mean, he's not dead.
He's not dead.
Not dead.
Not dead.
I'm only mostly dead.
Oh my god!
My Python Princess Bride. This show's got it all.
Too blaze.
It's a glaive.
Wait.
So did we beat the liches?
Yeah.
Taco is dead, but somehow there's an amazing spectral something. And he raises up just enough, like just the energy of eating Edward gave him enough strength to say three words. And Griffin, does that sound right?
Just have somebody heal you before you do this fucking, yeah, like you are just revived by your cool catchphrase.
I can't say hard ass shit 20 minutes after we kill someone.
Okay, fine.
And with the fucking Marx Brothers here, it could be upwards of 30.
All right, go ahead, go.
A Marx Brothers reference.
Yay. It's not a reference.
Don't laugh
say
so hard. You're Zeppo.
Taco, what do you say? What do you astrally project in the atmosphere?
Liches get stitches.
Okay.
To be fair, Merle, I think we would both agree that Taco would want to die after making that joke. So we should just let him go peacefully into that good night. The first thing I do before we do anything else. I check through my belongings to make sure Steven the goldfish is okay.
He's fine. Yeah, you got him. He's just he's blubbing around. And you recover. Everybody recovers the belongings that were knocked away by the magnets,
except presumably me because I'm unconscious.
Also in my possessions are healing potions that I bought and never used. I give Taco a fucking healing potion.
Okay. It heals him some hit points.
Thank you, pal.
The number doesn't matter. And yeah,
thank God. I had a dream that I said the coolest shit ever.
I actually said that. It weird, but I was the one who said it.
Okay,
if I remember correctly.
So the healing worked. You are healed. And you are back awake, although you are still very bad off, and now you just have the bell laying in a pile of ashes, and the red robe is kind of pointing towards it.
Should I get it? I'm talking to the red robe. Like, should I grab the bell?
Yeah, he should.
Should I get it?
He shrugs.
Aren't you still a mannequin?
Yeah.
You'd probably be safest to pick it up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I pick it up.
Okay. You hear a voice in your head as you pick it up with your one remaining arm. And this bell says, how would you like to live forever?
I'd hate it. Shut the fuck up.
Okay, you had other stuff, but let's just roll a wisdom saving throw.
I was an 18 plus whatever my
it's not good for your mannequin body, but the 18 is sufficient.
All he needs is a coat of varnish, and he is going to basically live forever.
That's not a bad point. You hear the bell say, okay, as you shut it down, you have reclaimed the sixth grand relic, the Animus Bell.
Just to make that clear, I've been thinking about this a lot since Magnus almost died, and like his great reward is looking forward to being with his wife.
Yeah,
after,
sure.
Like living so like the idea of living forever is like the least interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thing to Magnus
that all totally tracks. As soon as you pick up the bell,
you did die.
I don't want to get technical about it, but you are dead. Yeah, your body got destroyed, so you're dead.
You're dead.
I'm sorry.
As soon as you grab the bell, you feel all of you feel this fierce wind blow through this big chamber that you're in, and it knocks over the mannequins in the audience. Taco, it knocks over your friend mannequins. These mannequins also were kneeling by you as you were unconscious, like checking on you, making sure that you were all right. And this strong wind knocks over a light hanging from the ceiling, and you see some black smog get caught up in the windstorm, and it's just whipping off the walls and off the floor that you're standing on. It's sort of pulling, it's absorbing the cylinders all around the room, which are all turning into black smog. And this smog in the wind is now just so thick that you can't see anything. You're just surrounded by this deafening black windstorm. And then the wind shifts directions. It just starts going straight upward, and the smog is lifted, and Wonderland is just gone. You're all standing back in the middle of that circular clearing in the Felicity Wilds, and those billboards that were lining the path into the center here, they're just gone. And it's just the three of you and the red robe and about 20 other folks who are all standing in this clearing, and everybody looks understandably pretty confused. A lot of folks look understandably pretty miserable. And Taco, you feel a hand on your shoulder and you're healed for 36 hit points.
Nice.
And standing behind you is Antonia, your elf friend, one of the three folks that you met in the woods on the way in. And she has a sash tied around her eyes and her hair is now streaked with white. And she says, I don't remember these voices. I apologize. But she says, rough day.
Yeah, it's been a hard one. I died twice, I guess. So I'm, and that's been all the things that have happened. I didn't push. It. How was your thing?
Yeah, and to help you out, Griffin, she talked like Eva Gabor.
Okay, I don't think that's true, nor could I replicate that. She says, my day was pretty shit.
Are you a mannequin?
No. Oh my God, is that madness?
Yeah. So maybe like keep your shit to yourself unless you're a fucking mannequin. And I storm over to the red robe. Answers now.
Hey, I do have a question. Amongst the retrieving our belongings, did Magnus did get himself an arm, right? He got his arm back.
Yeah, plugged it back in like a G.I. Joe.
I think Magnus has his arm, but it's not attached. I think that would take some time to fix.
I hit the red robe with it.
he catches the arm as you swing it at him. Let's finish this first. We'll get to that. And Antonia says, I take it that this was all your guys doing, saving all these people, getting us all out.
You mean destroying the entire building and wiping out a bunch of? Yeah, that was us.
Sounds like us.
She says, no matter what you did in there, I think this is all that matters, really. You saved all these people. They wanted us to believe that we are who we are when we're at our worst, but you know that's not true, don't you, Taco?
Yeah, I guess I really did save the day. At the end of the day, I guess it doesn't matter who pushed what buttons and who betrayed who, really. The important thing is that we're all family. We're all part of this thing called life. By the way, you're welcome.
Hakuna Matata.
As you're saying that, Sterling approaches you, Merle, and it looks like he looked when you saw him in that screen. He's in like his late 30s with this early silver hair, and he looks gaunt. He's silent for just a moment, and then he drops to a knee in reverence, and he says, Merle, I made a terrible mistake. Maybe he sounds cool now, actually. Merle, I made a terrible mistake in that place, and it's what I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my days. I was the one who chose to forsake you in the first round. I knew I was sending you all to certain doom, and I didn't care. And, well, that's not very lordly of me, was it?
My son.
What?
My son, say three Hail Marys and six push-ups, and all is forgiven.
He says, I'm so sorry for you, for what I did to you, Merle, in there, and I vow to you that someday I will use my considerable power to make it up to you.
Oh, I didn't know you had considerable power.
Yeah, I'm the Lord of Neverwinter. I'm the most powerful man in the world. I don't like to brag, but...
And you were a giant douche before. That's awesome.
Hey, Griffin, can we deal with the Full Metal Alchemist situation I find myself in now, please?
Yeah, sure. Your buddy Rowan is there, too. And
my jerky buddy. It's great. I'm so happy to see him.
Okay.
You used to have to eat food. Do you remember that?
I used to be able to enjoy food. Yes, I do remember that. Yes.
Now you live on sap.
He actually started to approach you, Magnus, and then when he heard you, like, having a fit and being all angry.
Having a fit, Griffin? I lost my damn body.
I think he's a...
oh, just having a real hissy. Getting
I think
all
he's staying
of
away from
hissy.
You didn't just lose an arm.
Magnus, before you have your conversation, you approach and you swing the club at the red robe. You swing your other arm at the red robe, and right as he like kind of catches it and keeps it from hitting him, you have another vision. It's another memory that you are remembering so like powerfully and vividly that you just aren't here anymore. And this one's not like the other one where it was just like kind of fuzzy and it cleared up. This one is just static until it isn't. And you are walking through some badlands. It's this arid landscape of cracked red rock and clay as far as the eye can see, with a few shrubs poking through. And you are lost. You are so lost in this unforgiving environment. And you came here to hide something? That part is still a little bit foggy. You've made something, and you're terrified of it. And so you came to this place to hide it, but you got lost, and now you're so thirsty. You've removed the jacket of your uniform, which you've kind of sweat through. It is a bright crimson-red uniform with an insignia patch over the left breast pocket. You've taken that off because it's just too hot to have a jacket on right now. And you're just stumbling through this Badlands, and you see a stranger. You actually see two strangers in the distance, a man and a small girl. And they approach you, and they offer you a drink, and they offer you kindness and hospitality. And they're really good people. You spend some time with them, and they're just really good. And so you decide that you're going to hide your creation with them, because they're going to be the ones who are going to be able to keep this cup safe. And it takes you a while to come to, and you're just sort of in this like fugue state because you've been quietly walking with the rest of the group. You're all walking with the red robes back through the Felicity Wilds, following him. He stops you all in the wilds, and he says, I don't blame you for not trusting me right now, but I promise everything's going to make sense real soon.
I literally have nothing to lose. So, like, sure.
You all hear a crackle of like of what sounds like static, and the red robe goes quiet, and he really quickly puts a finger up to his hood, and he extends a finger, and an illusory object appears, and it is in the shape of your Stone of Far Speech. And he holds out a palm. He is requesting your Stones of Far Speech. And you can hear the voice of Angus on the Stone of Far Speech. And he's saying, Sirs, are you there? You've been out of... Sirs, you've been offline for a while. Are you there? And the Red Robe is requesting your Stones of Far Speech. And even though you can't see his face, he seems, like, urgent.
I give it to him. I look at Taco, and I look at Merle, and I say, do it.
I want a receipt. I want a receipt. All right, here's mine. I didn't want to talk to the kid anyway.
Taco?
Yeah.
Okay, you all hand over your Stones of Far Speech, and he crushes them in his hand.
Oh.
Hell yeah, going rogue.
And been waiting for this the whole time. Fuck yes. Off the grid. I pull out my credit cards and shred them. Fuck yes.
I moved to Portland.
Taco's always ready for this. I'm ready to go off the grid at any fucking moment.
Angus's tiny voice is drowned out as these stones are shattered. And right as he shatters them, something like thunder roars overhead. And only then do you notice that the sky above is... It looks like it's storming, but it's not raining. Like, it looks like it's storming in terms of, like, the look of it, but it's not actually, there's no precipitation. The Red Robe says, that was close. I forgot about that, about your stones. Listen, there's not much time. Night's going to fall soon, and we need to make some headway before it does, because, well, tomorrow's going to be fateful. And he looks at you, Magnus, and he says, oh, I forgot something else. And he conjures up another object. This one's not illusory, though. It's a small coin-shaped object that appears in his hand. And you hear him whisper into it, and he says, you'll need to disguise Magnus, obviously, and don't let anyone touch him or we'll be discovered. And then he waves his hand over the coin and it disappears.
Wait, am I now, like, am I covered? Am I disguised?
No. He just like took a note or something into this coin, and then it disappeared.
Okay.
Make a survival check, which is fun because I don't think we've ever done this one.
I mean, not great.
5. 19.
Hell yeah, Bear Grylls. 15.
Merle, with your survival check, you are sort of leading the party through the Felicity Wilds. You are making your way towards sort of the main road to the east.
And I'm eating rotten rabbits that are following the
Jesus,
road.
God, Jesus, what?
Yeah,
no.
Listen, life's tough.
We've been walking for 2 hours, Merle. There was no need to resort to that.
I have appetites.
You with
dark,
your...
Dark appetites.
With your really good roll, you, when it comes time to make camp, you stumble across a clearing, and it has a really well-crafted fire pit in the middle, and there are 3 stumps carved into surprisingly comfortable-looking chairs. And you know this place, because this is a campsite that the 3 of you made a little over a year ago on one of your first nights together. And you realize that you're really close now to the road that connects Neverwinter and, well, the ruins of Phandalin, and you're close to the Gerblin hideout and Wave Echo Cave. You're close to all that stuff, and you make camp quickly in your familiar campsite, and all of you get a hard-earned good night's rest. And Magnus, you dream some wild shit. Too many things actually to remember all of the next morning, but there are 2 visions that stick out, and they are just as like powerful as the ones that you've experienced so far. And the first is you're standing on the deck of a silver ship, and there are some other red robe figures standing around you, although you can't quite make out their faces. And this ship is soaring into the sky, and it's flying away from a land that is being consumed by this wave of darkness with these ribbons of bright green and red and blue inside. It's just being swallowed up. And the other vision that you can recall is really simple. It's the Voidfish. Floating up into its tank is a thick book bound in blue leather and silver trim. And that's...
Is it the Noidfish?
It's the Voidfish's brother, the Domino's Pizza ruining Noidfish. And you all, the next morning, you all make your way through the woods, past the main road.
I don't recognize the book at all. I just know, like, hey,
no.
Look.
Yeah.
I have a question. I know you're on a roll, and I don't mean to interrupt, but these visions he's having, are they from his point of view? He doesn't see his
they
own.
They are first person, yes.
He is not seeing his own face in this vision.
Yes, and also you don't know, Merle doesn't know about them. These are just Magnus visions.
Well, this was your dad asking.
No, yes, I know.
Who? I'm just so wrapped up in the fiction.
It's me, Larry Burnside.
I forgot we even had a dad, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just so deep in this story.
Y'all,
now.
I'm sorry, my heart's racing because this next shit is like shit I've been wanting to get to
go,
for a year.
Go!
The next morning you wake up and you finish your journey through the Felicity Wilds. You go past the main road. You're actually not far now from where you found those dead horses where Barry Blue Jeans and Gundren were attacked. And you go past that road and you go through more woods and you follow the Red Robe now as he leads you towards your destination. And he leads you to the mouth of a well-hidden cavern carved into actually the very same stretch of foothills where you found that Gerblin compound where Clark was. It's a few dozen miles from that cavern, but it's the same foothills, and there are some similarities. The Red Robe leads you into this cavern and through a winding, narrow path deeper into the cool depths of the foothills. And after a few minutes of spelunking, you find yourself in a room cleft into the stone. And it's obviously the lair of something that is... been cleared out by this Red Robe, which is its current occupant. This room is lit by several dozen candles, all arranged on a desk piled with magical tomes and maps. And behind that desk is a large wooden board displaying the whole of Faerun, with strings connecting images and diagrams at certain points on the map, in towns like Phandalin and Armos and Greenhold and Rockport and Goldcliff and Neverwinter. And it's the board of somebody who has been tracking the relics and the Bureau intently. And there's another source of light in this room. There is a 6-foot-tall glowing pod on the opposite end of this room from the desk, and it's full of a swirling green fluid, and inside we can see something growing, or rather, someone. There is a body being created inside of this pod, but the liquid is too opaque for you to see who it is. And on the desk, there is a scroll unfurled and held in place by several candles, and it is an incredibly detailed map with a route drawn through it in red, and it's a map depicting with perfect accuracy the headquarters of the Bureau of Balance. And there's another thing in this room that catches your eye, a small, plain, wooden chest, and draped over that chest is a red robe. Like an actual tangible red robe, not the personification that you've been talking to. And sewn into its breast, you see a familiar sight. You see a circular patch with a design containing 12 multicolored circles and a sort of like shifting, imparsible text in the middle of it. Only Magnus, you can read that text as plain as day. It's an acronym and it says IPRE. And the red robe speaks and says, events that have been in motion for over a decade are about to reach critical mass. There are gaps in your stories that are unimaginably massive, but before the end of this day, I promise you they will be filled. And he drifts over to the tank and says, I acquired this invention years ago, and I've used it to recreate my physical form several times now in pursuit of my goal. I've come close, but I've never reached that goal. It's because once I'm in my body, I'm going to forget all of the truths that I know now in my lich form. And I can try and convince myself to follow my own commands. And he shows you that coin-shaped object that you saw him speaking into earlier. And he says, but, well, I can be pretty stubborn. And I also don't have any of my potent magical abilities inside of my body because I'm not going to remember the fact that I'm a lich at all. He looks at you, Magnus, and he says, Magnus, I see your wheels spinning, but I'm sorry. It takes months for this device to grow a new body, and we don't have months, fellas. We have hours. He says, I'm gonna go into that tank and into my body, and then the four of us are going to head back to the Bureau of Balance, and we're going to get the truth that we deserve. And it's going to be uncomfortable here in a bit, perhaps, because you're going to recognize me, but I'm not going to recognize you, so I apologize in advance for my rudeness. And he drifts towards the tank and he says, if we all follow my commands, we will be successful. I have been planning this for some time and I believe wholeheartedly in my preparations. And he sinks into the tank and you see one last time the cowl of the red robe poke out of the tank. And he says, hey, Merle, would you be a bud? I'm going to be naked as a jaybird when I come out of here. Can you fetch me a change of clothes from that chest?
Be glad to, buddy.
And he lowers down into the tank. And at this time, Magnus, you're struck with one more vision, and this one's a doozy. You have your back up to a cliff's edge, axe drawn, an army of shadows approaching, and the sky is pitch black. So black that the sky can't contain it all. It looks like there are columns of tar illuminated with streaks of red and green and blue just falling, just dripping out of the sky and plowing into the ground. And in the distance, you see a silver ship weave between those columns and fly out of sight. And when you see it fly away, you feel this sense of immense relief. And next to you, you see a human man. And he is wearing the same crimson uniform that you've got on with the same patch, only instead of a jacket, he's wearing a full robe. And he looks at you as this horde is about to overrun you, and he drops the wand that he's holding, and a black spike shoots out from out of the horde and into his chest, and he staggers, but he stays on his feet. And he turns, and he looks at you, Magnus, and he smiles. And he says, well, we'll get him next time. And Merle, you crack open the chest and retrieve the clothes within. A white cotton shirt, a studded leather belt, and a pair of pants. Sturdy, denim, and blue. The membrane encasing this pod splits, and green brackish fluid splashes out and onto the floor. And a stout, naked human man steps out of the pod. And you recognize his face instantly. It's the face of a man who you quite reasonably assumed you would never see again, because the last time you saw this face, it was being swallowed up in the righteous fire that destroyed the town of Phandalin. But here he is. Barry's back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa. And we host the weekly comedy podcast One Bad Mother.
We celebrate our moments of parenting genius
as well as our failures.
Just like, we're going to have hot dogs. And I'm like, no, we're having fun. Everybody loves hot dogs.
Yeah.
And it just like smashes that thing right on my chest. And then I'm just crying in the middle of like kids' space while people are like literally dancing with their children.
Parenting can be sad and painfully funny at the same time.
So join us each week as we admit that this is hard, but we're getting really good at it.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Podphone. What type of podcast are you looking for?
You have chosen funny podcasts about bad movies.
Rated R. May we recommend The Flophouse.
Three friends talk about bad movies and make each other and you laugh.
Rated R. The Flophouse is playing at your ears.
If you download it right now or whenever.
Rated R. To purchase tickets to The Flophouse, you don't need to do that. Just download it. The Flophouse. Rated R. For nudity, I guess.